Good evening, and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. This week is a special one for UMFM, as it is our annual Pledgerama fundraising campaign, and we have incredible lineups on all our shows to highlight our amazing and entertaining programming. UMFM is a listener-supported radio, radio by the listener for the listener. All the content you hear on UMFM, from music, sports, and news coverage to the spoken word shows, are heard throughout the University of Manitoba campus, local Winnipeg, and online communities. The shows are delivered with passion by the UMFM team and over 130 volunteers who genuinely love what they do. And if you love the wide selection of programming and the minimal advertisements on UMFM, let us know by calling 204-474-6610. Or going online to umfm.com and showing your support for what UMFM is, listener-supported radio. Again, that number is 204-474-6610. Of the broad range of talk shows on UMFM, Art World Innovators explores a wide range of career options for artists, architects, business entrepreneurs, and more, with a lineup of national and international guests, sharing their stories and insight from the professional experience in the art world. To highlight the types of interviews you will hear on Art World Innovators, here's an interview that was done last November with Peter Ambi, founder of Last Resort, a contemporary art gallery in Denmark, speaking with us about how he got started in the art world, what is involved in being an art gallery owner and representing contemporary artists. Our guest this evening is Peter Ambi, co-owner of Last Resort in Copenhagen, an art gallery that is all about experiencing art. Peter is passionate about art that stays with you long after you've seen it. Last Resort is a contemporary platform for Danish and international emerging artists, exhibited in a unique environment that encourages interaction and conversation, things that Peter recognizes are just as important as the art itself. He represents artists that work on a wide range of media, from painting to installations, photography, and video, and has a special interest in conceptual art. He recently participated and had a popular booth at Artissima, Italy's most important contemporary art fair held annually in Torino. Peter has long held an interest in art, spending many summer vacations at the Copenhagen studio of his older brother, Balder Ulrich, who encouraged him to open a gallery. Fortunately, Peter took his advice. Peter is speaking with us tonight about the gallery Last Resort from the perspective of a contemporary art gallery owner and innovator in the art world. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
When you posted an article on Spike Art Magazine's website about going out in Copenhagen, you wrote not only from the perspective of an art gallery co-owner of Last Resort, but also as an art collector based in Copenhagen, an importer of luxury foods, and an amateur DJ. Can you elaborate on your background and multiple business ventures and how this has contributed to your current success as an art gallery owner?
The extra titles are maybe a bit far-fetched. I am a co-owner of a small business where we import luxury foods. We import caviar from a farm in Germany and have our own small caviar label. And unfortunately, we've just decided to close it down. It's wonderful product, but it's a side business for all of us, so we don't really have enough time to handle all the small business parts. The amateur DJ part is exactly what it is. I'm not a professional DJ. I do have an interest in music, and where I think it's as much a social thing as the music thing. And when I was in my early 20s, I was running some nightclubs. It's also a very interesting social space, which I also think the gallery has some of the same elements. It is, a gallery is a much more static and somehow boring or frightening environment. But I really wish for a part of the art experience to also be to have a social element.
So your background did help you get started in the art gallery. And how did you come to naming your gallery Last Resort?
Well, it's a bit odd because when I was just starting my gallery, I was looking for a space and I found a beautiful space close to the airport in Copenhagen, which was really sort of the last stop before no man's land, but there was the metro had just been extended and had a station right next door. And unfortunately, I didn't get the space, but I had this idea that it should be called the Last Resort because it would be sort of a travel for people. I think it could have multiple meanings. And I never used it, and I ended up with a space in the center of the city, a smaller space. A couple of years ago, I merged with another gallerist, an old friend, Andreas, and we were discussing what names we should have. Our respective galleries had been named after ourselves, and neither one of us would want it to be, you know, one of these gallery names for the combination of names. And I said, well, I have this old idea for a gallery called Last Resort. I think it could maybe work for us because I think it has for me, it has multiple meanings, but I also think it has some abstract qualities as I also enjoy in a lot of art. So that's what we chose. It had the result that when we announced the merger, we sent out a newsletter. We made sort of a small GIF animation trying to illustrate that his gallery, Henningsen Gallery, and Peter Ambu Gallery was now going to be Last Resort in a very simple way, and tried to explain it in a very simple way. And even though I had explained most of it, maybe I hadn't mentioned the name for my mother, but she wrote to me straight away and started calling me and started writing, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm extremely well. Are you sure? Do you want me to? I'll come straight to your house now if you need me. Like, I'm a bit puzzled about this. And she, for some reason, she thought it was such a dark name that she didn't understand that it was our announcement of the merger, but she thought it was a suicide letter, which is a bit extreme, but that's my mother.
So you represent Danish and an international set of emerging and contemporary artists. Can you tell us about some of the artists you represent and exhibit in your gallery?
Yes, certainly. Well, when I opened the gallery, I'd been in another setup. We were working with some extremely established artists, and I was a bit tired of always feeling that you had to ask another gallery permission and that you would be last in line for the works and so on, and you had to spend too much time on discussing paperwork rather than working with the artist. So when I opened by myself, I thought that it would be a good idea to work with only with artists from my own generation, but from all over the world, where we could sort of grow together. The program is still based on this. I never wanted to restrict it to any kind of medium. I don't want to restrict it to any specific type of art, but say there's been very little, never really exhibited figurative painting, which is, on another note, very popular in Denmark, but never been part of our main interest. And also, I've definitely broken with, like, this was a kind of a dogma to that we all had to be the same age and grow together and so on. But the artist I probably spend most time with today is at least double my age, and is a very established Swedish artist who lived in France for a lot of years called Gun Godillo. I'm also, as we speak, I just coming from a prize ceremony where she received the Niels Wessel-Bagge Grant, which is one of the main art prizes in Denmark. And she's been showing all over the world and with some of the greatest galleries, Beiler in Basel and Denise René in Paris. And then at the moment, we're preparing an exhibition with Justin Morin, who's a French artist who works with sculpture and draperies, like sort of. It is draperies as a sculpture is his main thing, and where it usually bases it on an actual image that he makes into a completely abstract gradient and then sculpts this printed silk cloth that he uses for the draperies. And then we will probably be too long for you to list all the artists, but we have two Swedish artists, two French artists, Japanese artists who is based in France, two American artists. And in the spring, we'll show Portuguese artists, two other American artists, all new to the program. And then we work with a young Danish artist group, and where they and Gun Godillo are the only artists we work with that are actually Copenhagen-based.
And an important component of the exhibitions are your openings or vernissages to introduce your artists. Can you give us a few details about organizing these and their importance to the artists and the exhibitions?
Yes. Well, this is something we've been experimenting with a lot because it's a really strange thing. The difficult thing for a lot of artists, which I really understand the frustration, which my brother has also had. I remember this from my childhood that he had a lot, was that when you're an artist, you're very much alone. You're alone in your studio, you work alone with the work, and it takes a long time. Like, it might take months and months to prepare for an exhibition. So I think The main importance is really for the artist after this long, enormous work that they have put into creating the exhibition is that they meet some people who actually enjoy it and who are there to see the work. And that's where we've been experimenting. I think for a lot of openings, it's unfortunately just a place that people use to get free drinks. We grew pretty tired of a lot of strange people coming if we had an opening on a Friday night, always complaining about if there was not enough drinks or getting extremely drunk and never engaging with the art. We moved the openings to early Saturday afternoon to try to avoid this and avoid a part of the crowd because there's, of course, a lot of people we want to see there. Besides the artist peers, we also want to see our friends and family and collectors. I must say it's been very difficult to maintain these Saturday afternoon openings. We even had some, we were showing some new foreign artists that there's not anyone who knows the artist in Denmark. They don't have any network here, and it might only be our parents who show up in the end, which can be a bit comic, but it can also be, I remember with the first exhibition we had, the Shustan that we were opening with on Friday, it was the only four people that showed up were my parents, the French ambassador, and the cultural attaché, which was a good audience in the end because we had a good time to speak to the ambassador and the director of the French Culture Institute, which is rare, but they had out some time to be there, and we probably wouldn't have a chance if all these people who only comes for the free drinks were there.
This month you also had a booth at Artissima, the 2018 Italy's most important annual contemporary art fair focusing on experimentation and research. Being that your artists fit that profile, what are the benefits to your artists and your gallery by participating in an art fair?
This is a very difficult question because I think for a lot of years, especially if you're in an outpost, like Copenhagen is an outpost somehow, is not a center of the art world, you'll have to you want to work with contemporary art, international contemporary art, you need to go and meet your clients because not everyone are going to come to you. And the art fairs has been an extremely important way to meet a lot of new clients. And fortunately, I always thought it was a terrible way to show art because you mix too many things together. But still, I can enjoy it, so I appreciate it. And unfortunately, the concept has grown so popular that there's a lot of mega fairs and a lot of important fairs out there, too many for the collectors to actually digest. It becomes so extremely expensive that it's also something that is closing a lot of even very established galleries that are not mega galleries with an enormous budget. Fair can easily cost you, on the lower end, cost you $15,000 for exhibiting a couple of days. And I think that's tough for most small businesses. I think it's definitely been tough for us, especially some of the years where we've been participating in a lot of fairs. I think most busy year we were participating in 8 fairs around the world. That's really a lot of expenses you need to pay upfront or several months before the art fair, and you never know whether it's going to be worth it or not. But I usually come back with from Artissima, I came back really, really positive. There's a lot of great people there and a lot of great interest in it was a solo booth with Concordio. I met them. We've been there, I think this was our 4th time, and the first years the Italian collectors were very reluctant speaking to us. We really felt outside. I feel that we've slowly been more and more accepted, and this year there was some amazing people who showed interest and spoke to us or we got in contact with. So that's definitely important. I would never have met them in Copenhagen.
Well, we're just running out of time, and I'd like to thank you so much for being on our show and sharing your insight and perspectives on running your own gallery. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much, Susan.
That was Peter Amby, gallery owner, speaking with us from Copenhagen. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to Art World Innovators on UMFM 101.5. For for those of you just tuning in, and as a reminder to those listening, this is our Pledge-O-Rama annual fundraising week, which will run from 8 p.m. on Friday, October 18th through to October 25th. And we hope you will call in to offer your contributions to help us reach our goal of $36,000. We can only do this with your pledge, so please call us at 204-474-6610 or visit umfm.com to make your pledge online. We have some fabulous gifts to thank those of you calling in this week with our usual assortment of amazing incentives, including your choice of some limited edition UMFM swag or a tax-deductible receipt. And for those of you who pledge at least $101.50, you will be entered into draws for the grand prizes. This year, we have UMFM stickers, buttons, guitar picks, magnets, a brand new UMFM coffee travel mug, complete with the reusable silicone straw, new UMFM hats, and this year's edition of UMFM Radio throwback t-shirts and hoodies, designed by our local artist, Alex Plant, plus so much more. So if you love the wide selection of programming and the minimal advertisements on UMFM, let us know by calling 204-474-6610 or visiting umfm.com and show your support for what UMFM is, listener-supported radio. Again, that number is 204-474-6610. Here is our next interview to give you a sample of Art World Innovators, previously aired in March of 2019. Our guest this evening is renowned French sculptor Pascal Pierme, born in Saint-Raphaël, France, where he grew up and completed his degree in art history and technique. Following this training, he earned his degree in aerograph technique in San Diego. In 1997, he moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he currently has his studio. During the course of his career, he has worked in collaboration with architects on an urban project, done a working residency in a bronze foundry in Italy, exhibited in cities from Santa Fe, New Mexico at the Museum of Contemporary Art, to Tsushima City Art Olympia in Tokyo. He has exhibited at the Taos Art Museum in New Mexico, the Florence Biennale in Italy, the Royal Academy of Art in London, UK, as well as participated in many national and international solo and group exhibitions. Pascal's works can be found in many permanent public and private collections, including ABC News Studio, Nobel Prize recipient Roger Guillemin's collection, Pierre Cardin's collection in Cannes, Casablanca Records in New York, and many others. Numerous art publications have featured his story, exhibitions and sculpture, and Artworks International Incorporated has published the book Pascal in 2006 as part of their acclaimed artist series. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you to you.
Thank you. You're a widely acclaimed sculptor and have become known as a master of medium for your innovative sleek works in a wide variety of woods and other materials. What are a few of your earliest memories that may have inspired your ideas and passions for creating your work?
Well, when I was a kid, I was already very good at it. I was not very good at spelling. I was not very good in mathematics, but I was really good at drawings and making little thing, you know, what you do at school, using your hand, you know, like little mock-up and stuff like that. So my friends, when I was a kid, called me Picasso. That's funny. And the main thing happened to me is I ended up by going to school to become a technician dentist. And that was extremely interesting by using so many different plastic and resin and plaster and gold and steel and different materials. And you have to be really good with your hand to be a technician dentist. I didn't like to do that very much because it was not for me, let's say. It's an amazing job, you know. But what I find out is during the weekend, I was more interested by going to the lab and doing more artistic stuff. So that was the beginning of it, you know.
And do you recall anyone in your family who did artwork that may have influenced you as well?
Very much, very much. I grew up around my grandfather, who was a wood sculptor. He was not very contemporary artist. He was more good with his hands. You know, he was a painter, but very traditional, very academic painting. When I was 18 years old, I met my biologic father, who I didn't know before, and he was an artist in California, in San Diego. So I flew from France, and I went to San Diego, and this is where I learned the technique of aerography. And meeting my biologic father when I was 18 was already amazing. But on top of that, he was an artist. And I totally embraced the lifestyle and all the newness of what it represents for me. I thought at that time that it was impossible for me to become an artist. I was too young. I was afraid of the artist world. I could never imagine that I would become one day. But I really liked the idea, so it came later, much later.
Well, your sculptures certainly capture a feeling of dynamic movement and sensual rhythm that bring your sculptures to life. How does music play a part in your creative expression?
Well, I have to say I'm probably a frustrated musician. When I was 10, 11 years old, my mom put me at a music school, and I was supposed to learn piano, and I did solfège. You know, I learned the notes for 2 years without to touch a piano. I was so frustrated. I hate the teacher. I hate everything about music. But in me, I miss it. You know, I remember I could have been a good musician, but unfortunately, the approach that I had to the piano was a nightmare. 2 years of learning the notes, you know, all the solfège. I'm not going to say solfège in English, but and without to touch the piano was the worst. So I feel like I could have become a musician. And then if some feelings of music is in my work, I'm not surprised at all. I understand the music.
How do you think the environment in France and Santa Fe and the cultures and the natural elements that surround you have contributed to your creative designs and sculptural forms?
Well, the desert. The desert is definitely, the west of the United States is so beautiful and so open. I don't know why, but the sky seems to be much bigger here than in France. How the sky could be bigger somewhere, you could think. But I believe the desert is a magic place. You know, it's a very inspiring environment for writers, for poets, for, you know, any sensitive souls. I believe it worked for me. It's this feeling of everything is possible, of freedom. Also, I think that the environment here push you to be yourself, to be who you really are. So for any creative people, it's excellent. That's not surprising why so many artists are living in Santa Fe. We say there's a lot of artists in Santa Fe, but it's not about Santa Fe. It is, of course, but it's also the West, you know, the open space.
So, for example, when you work on a variety of scales with outdoor sculptures and small intimate pieces, what do you hope the viewer will experience and feel and sense as they view your work? And can you describe a piece for us?
Well, I heard in a movie recently, I think it's A New Star is Born, I heard a sentence that I like very much. One of the moments the guy say, well, it's not enough that you have talent, you have to have something to say. And I like that. So what I have to say, unfortunately, is not necessarily a clear message. All my life, I've been more attracted to questions than answers. So I think if my work is seen as something more as a key than an open door, I like that. I just want my work to be another question for the viewer or to excite an open mind. That's what I would hope.
And do you often start with maquettes or drawings, or do you prefer the spontaneity that allows you to change your direction and flow at any time during your process?
That may be a long answer. I'm going to try to be short here.
Okay.
I truly believe that the real creativity, when you are really good at it, when something like the magic moment is not when you know what you're going to do, is when you don't know, when you surprise yourself, when spontaneity is used, you know, like when it comes. So the problem is I believe a sculptor has to know what he's going to do way before to do it. And a painter can be more creative, meaning a sculptor, 80% of the work is more work. You know, it's working, and 20% is creativity. A painter would have like almost 100% of his time on the painting more as creative. So what I'm trying to do is to, because a sculptor, if he's taking a decision, you know, it's difficult to go back. So, and how to know what you're going to do and be spontaneous in 3D work, because even my wall pieces are with 3D technique. So the thing is, it's a good way for me to use the 3D technique for the wall pieces as well as the sculpture. But the key to me is to be the most spontaneous possible, to surprise yourself, you know, to have this feeling. But at the same time, as using technique of 3D, it's to pushing as far as possible the non-return decision. So to me, it's yes. You need a drawing first. Yes, you need an idea, but it has to be very open.
let's say if I make a metaphor with traveling, I say, okay, let's go travel in Japan, but I don't know, I don't want to know where I'm going to sleep, where I'm going to land, and who I'm going to meet.
Some of your current indoor and outdoor works are in steel, and what are the challenges and advantages of working in this material?
I'm working with somebody who is specialized in steel. I do work on the steel pieces, but I don't have the tools for that. So my main thing is wood. When I work with steel, I have another studio where a technician is working for me, and we do those steel pieces. The steel pieces that originally are made more for the big pieces, for outside. Outdoor pieces in wood, it's more difficult, especially in my style of work. Doesn't like the crack and the damage that the weather does on the wood, even if I love wood sculpture, wood outdoor sculpture from other artists. So originally it was more for outdoor things. Also, I do smaller pieces in steel. It's to see my work and to think in a different way, because in sculpture, again, you know, each piece, each shape must have the perfect medium. Like some pieces in wood, they are perfect in wood. You don't want to see it in bronze or in marble. And some pieces in marble will look bad in wood. So to me, to see my work in a different medium, it's a different approach of it. So I see it in wood, I do it in steel, and then I go back to the wood, and it's a good way to understand better. So it'll be changing, forcing myself to change environment.
And you're also fortunate to be one of the artists Artworks International Incorporated partners with to increase your national and global recognition and advance your career. Can you tell us about this innovative organization and how it's been helpful to you?
Well, this organization is just amazing. Samantha Ferguson, who is managing it, is a fantastic person. The promotion for artists is essential, very important. Doesn't mean anything if an artist is by himself, you know, and have talent. People have to know about it, you know. So the promotion is excellent for it. And Artwork International knows what to do, how to help artists, how to understand the artist between the two worlds, between the commercial, the gallery, the business world, and the artist studio and the artist soul. So that's very important to have this link there. And they are really good to help you for that. So it's essential for me, absolutely.
Do you have any upcoming exhibitions you'd like to share with our audience?
Actually, right now, my gallery in New York, Michel Mario, is showing my work at it's actually a solo show at the booth at Scope in New York this weekend. I was supposed to be at Volta, but Volta has been canceled this year for technical reasons. And Volta is right next to the Armory show in New York, but I think they had a technical problem, so they moved everybody from Volta to Scope, and is no Volta this year, unfortunately. But it's a good show.
I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us tonight and sharing your insight and story with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you very much.
That was French sculptor Pascal Pierre-May speaking with us from a studio in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Again, in case you missed any of my other reminders, this week is a special one for UMFM, as it is our annual Pledgerama fundraising drive, and we have incredible lineups on all our shows to highlight our amazing and entertaining programming. All the content you hear on UMFM, from music, sports, and news coverage, to the spoken word shows, are heard throughout the University of Manitoba campus, local Winnipeg, and online communities. The shows are delivered with passion by UMFM's team and over 130 volunteers who genuinely love what they do. Our Pledgerama annual fundraising week will be run from Friday, October 18th through to October 25th, and we hope you will call in to offer your contributions to help us reach our goal of $36,000, 100% of which will go towards a major project we have identified as our main priority, to replace our broadcast antenna, which is more than 20 years old and must become compliant with new safety regulations. We can only do this with your pledge, so please call us at 204-474-6610 or visit umfm.com to make your pledge online. Again, as a thank you for your pledge, we have some fabulous gifts with our usual assortment of wonderful incentives of UMFM stickers, buttons, guitar picks, magnets, a brand new UMFM coffee travel mug, complete with reusable silicone straw. new UMFM hats, and this year's edition of UMFM Radio's throwback t-shirts and hoodies that are designed by local artist Alex Plant. And for those of you who donate over $75, you will be entered into the UMFM bonus draws with special gift items you will find listed at umfm.com. So if you love the wide selection of programming and the minimal advertisements on UMFM, let us know by calling 204-474-6610 or visiting umfm.com and show your support for UMFM. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.